All right, welcome to Behind the Human, everyone. This is a really special episode and kind of like a year in the making. So let me provide a bit of context. Last year, I shot a pilot episode for a new docuseries that's actually still in the works. As it turns out, it seems to take a little bit longer than anticipated to get these kind of projects out to the world. And Mia and I really felt strongly about at least releasing the interview portion of that pilot, which is what you're about to experience right now. Now make sure to stick around to the end because there are a couple additional questions or outtakes thanks to our awesome director Josh Scheinman that we included. And I have to say it was a really beautiful way to wrap the whole episode, so make sure you listen to the end. And if you want a little visual sneak peek of what the pilot looks like, make sure to jump on the socials for Behind the Human and Mia Martina for the sizzle to this episode. Okay, a little bit about Mia. Now, this bio took me about 15,000 takes staring directly into a camera doing it from memory. But here, from the comfort of my recording booth, we're going to nail it in one shot. Here we go. From growing up in a small town of 500 people to singing in front of 200,000 screaming fans, Mia Martina is a multi-platinum recording artist who at the peak of her career refused to become someone she wasn't. A decision that led to being shunned by the industry and mentally shattered. For the first time, Mia shares her full story and the practices and the mental fitness tools she used to rebuild her mind and life. The same tools you can use to become mentally resilient and gain clarity on who you are and who you aspire to be.
If I'm on the biggest stages in the world and I leave my stage and I'm crying, then I know I'm not aligned anymore. This is not who I am.
Mia, welcome.
Thank you so much.
I thought we could start with your dad.
My dad.
Your dad. I saw, it was his birthday, right?
Yes, it was.
Earlier this month. And I saw you post about that on your socials and asked all the followers to wish him a happy birthday. Which I just, you know, just going through the comments and seeing that it was just such a loving thing to do, and you could feel some social good for a change on those platforms. So I thought it'd be appropriate, you know, and it gave me a glimpse, obviously, into the relationship you have with your father. But if he was sitting here right now, how would he describe who you were before your music career and your life was strapped to a rocket ship, essentially? Like, who was that young girl?
Honestly, my dad was always... he was just so present with me all the time. He really was. Like, I have the best memories growing up with my dad because my dad was an entrepreneur. So just to put things into context, my parents, both of them, my mom and my dad, they come from nothing.
Okay.
So, and they really built their life up and they remained in the community that they're born in. And my dad is... the entrepreneur of the town, as I could say. So he's kind of been a mentor and a coach in a sense. I'm sure he didn't see it like that back then, but he was a pillar for a lot of people. And I would see that growing up as being his daughter. A lot of people would be, when my dad would come, they would be like so excited to see him because he always came with good opportunities, good news, and he did a lot for the community. So growing up, I was very, I always saw that in him. And I think I just loved hanging out with my dad because I loved to ask him so many questions. So probably the first thing my dad would say is that she was really inquisitive.
Okay.
Very inquisitive as a child. And I was a free spirit. Like, you couldn't tell me nothing.
Yeah.
But I would just go around him, do his, like, we would go to lunch together. And my dad's best friend at the time was a judge.
How interesting.
Yeah, it was judge of the town and a dentist. And his
got it all covered.
Yeah, got it all covered. So, and I would go to lunch with them all the time and just sit there and listen to what they would talk about.
Yeah.
And it was just that type of relationship. I kind of just would soak in what they would talk about. And it was always about politics, the world, doing better for the community, always about that type of stuff, family, of course, but like always good things.
Yeah.
So I think that was really instilled into me from a young age, for sure.
So inquisitive, Any other characteristics you think he would just kind of roll off the tongue at that at that age?
Just free spirit, to the fullest. I just, whatever I put my mind to would happen.
Yeah.
For sure. Because I was just one of those kids. Like, you couldn't tell me anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then you had that role model. Because now it makes sense. Because I saw somewhere in the research that your dad would put on these Tony Robbins tapes in the car.
Oh, yeah.
Right? On drives and whatnot. Like, that's a beautiful way to form a really inquisitive mindset. Plus, just like this view on the world that is positive.
Yeah, like I really admired my dad because he was always so positive and he's so lighthearted. Like I never saw my dad angry.
Okay.
Ever.
Yeah.
Ever. He always had that same energy, like beautiful energy that I want.
Yeah.
Always. And he was always calm. Very calm. And I just took that away from him. And I think like, not take that away from him, but took that from him. And into everyday life, you know, because I truly believe when you grow up, your foundation is everything. So I saw that growing up, even though I didn't know what it meant at the time.
Sure.
It was
like instilled in you.
It was instilled in me. Yes. Because he would take me to piano lessons.
Okay.
And he's like, we're going to listen to some Tony Robbins today.
Because that's normal.
Yes, because that's normal. And he's like, and he's super successful. If you want to be successful, you got to listen to him.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
So what was it like growing up in it's St. Ignace, right?
Yeah.
This is like a 500-person town in New Brunswick, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I got to say? Growing up in a small town, now that I've traveled around the world and lived in big city, it definitely has its perks. You know, it's actually really beautiful to be part of a community and everybody knows everybody and you feel safe. And the little town gossip is actually quite nice.
Yeah,
because it's good. It's good. It's all in good. You know, it's most of the time it's all good people just making a living, very caring, very nurturing. I love it.
Your parents are still there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mom and dad are still there.
Okay. So what does it feel like when you go back?
It feels so good. I feel like when I go back, obviously the community knows what I do, obviously. So it's just good to see that I can inspire others, like that I can be like, yes, this is possible for you too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it feels nice.
I wanted to ask you about when music like really entered your life and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there was a moment, and I don't know if this was your first concert or if it was, definitely one that sparked something in your mind, but I think you were 7 or 8 and you went to go see Celine Dion.
Yes.
Was that your first big concert?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Where was it?
In Moncton.
Moncton, okay.
Yeah. Moncton, New Brunswick. And I think it was the Power of Love concert. But anyways, I just remember seeing this woman on stage and I'm like, this is going to be me.
Yeah.
I have to do what she does. I was in complete awe of her.
Why do you think, like, was that, were you surrounded by music? Was that just, like, what was it that sparked
it? No, I really wasn't, because nobody else in my family had the artistic, was in the artistic side, you know, in the music side. I don't know, as a kid, I was just so mesmerized by Mariah Carey, Celine Dion, Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson, and I would just look at their videos for hours and listen to their cassettes and their tapes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then what took you out of the town? What was the move?
The move was I told my parents, this is that I feel like I'm stuck here.
Okay.
I feel like there's more for me out there and I have to go. I have to go somewhere else. I want to go to a different city so I can spread my wings because I've done it all here. Like I won beauty pageants and I would only enter the beauty pageants so that I could perform my talent.
Okay.
And then the town started noticing. So I would win the competitions. And then I started becoming a wedding singer at a very young age. At like 15, 16, I was a wedding singer.
Yeah.
And I sung for a lot of weddings. So I'm like, okay, well, this is like not cutting it for me. Like, I need to go wing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the only way to do that is if I move from this town. And I convinced my parents to let me go. And they supported me.
Okay.
And they let me go to Ottawa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember that first wedding, what that felt like when you performed?
Yes.
So
the
like?
First wedding that I performed at was actually my sister's wedding.
Okay. So that plays a little bit.
Oh my God.
No, not helpful.
No.
Okay.
I remember playing the piano and I'm like trying not to cry.
Oh.
Because I was so emotional. So it took me a few times, few different weddings that I would perform. I had to stop myself from bawling.
Sure.
Because I thought it was so beautiful. I'm like, oh my God, Mia, you got to get it together here.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so then you went to Ottawa, but it wasn't for music, right?
No.
A master's in psychology.
Yes. So I wanted to enroll in university for psychology, and I did, I did.
Why? What was the spark for that?
You know, psychology for me, I was always intrigued by people and what triggers them, the whole aspect of it.
Yeah.
And I've always been very good at people. Like for some reason, ever since I was a little girl, it was like I was a therapist to so many people. Everybody would come to me out of the blue and just tell me all their problems. Yes, including my piano teacher. Get this. Yes.
So, tell me more.
So yes. So my piano teacher, which she was a university piano teacher. So my parents used to drive me 1 hour, 2 times a week.
Okay.
Like to go there. And most of the piano lesson never really happened. It was her telling me about her problems. And I was like her confidant. And I was like, oh my God, this is like crazy. Like I'm supposed to be learning piano, but I feel like I need to help this lady.
Yeah.
So I would just go and listen to her. And I don't know, I felt really good after I helped her, even though I knew like, she really wasn't doing her job.
Sure.
But I felt good that I was helping her.
Okay.
And like just little occurrences like that would just keep happening. People would just dump their problems on me and I would kind of have a solution for them. They would just always tell me, Mia, thank you so much. You gave me such great advice. So that's kind of why I'm like, maybe there's something there. Yeah.
And then you've got Tony Robbins whispering in the background in the car, talking mindset. And psychotherapy and all this stuff, right?
Exactly. Which I didn't even know what all of that meant. But I guess subconsciously, I knew what to say. And I think just being a good listener really helped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you go to Ottawa.
Yes.
You're in school. How did the internship come about for in the music space?
Oh boy. So the internship, I was in Ottawa at the time, and I was like during the weekdays, I would work at this nightclub and I would do these shows, like either fashion shows or special nights. And
like you were in the fashion show or
no,
you're like you're
I was
running?
Organizing them.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yes, I was organizing them. So the owner said, we have a special group of people coming in tonight and they have a really hot song on the radio right now. So I'm going to introduce you to that. And lo and behold, I get introduced and we kind of start a connection and he called me the next day and I kind of just started interning. It's like, come over to the studio and like, you know, just do some stuff for us. So I just kind of started doing stuff for them. I was young, like I didn't care. I was just so excited that I got to like be with people that are in that space. So I was like, okay, this is really cool. Like, okay, let me do what they need to do. Let me be the gopher, no problem. I have nothing else to do.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
So where, like at that moment in time, you're studying psychology, but like where was all of the music? I mean, now this is starting to come in, but like in your own mind, was the music... was it just still a dream? Was it at all in like kind of the foreground of, okay, I want to try to figure out a path to do this? Like, where was that at?
No, it's so funny. Like, I knew I always wanted to do music and it's kind of like, I felt like it would just happen for me. I just felt that that something's going to happen for me. Like, this isn't, psychology is not my destiny. I'm going to be at the right place at the right time and it's just going to happen for me.
Interesting.
And it really did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you think you learned that, or where did you pick that up?
I don't know.
Did you journal as a kid or anything?
No, but I always had big dreams, and I always, whatever I put my mind to, I would accomplish it. If I wanted to win something, I won it, best believe.
Okay.
If I wanted to learn something, I did it. Like, I was just very strong-willed. So if I wanted to be a star, I'm going to be a star. I don't know how,
yeah,
but it's going to happen.
And you put it in your mind.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Like when you saw Celine Dion, it was like, you could, I imagine you were picturing her on the stage and like one day.
Yes. And you know, the funny part is I would like literally dress like them. I would go into my mom's closet.
Yeah.
When they were gone, obviously she would catch me doing this. She would have had a heart attack.
Sorry, mom.
Sorry, mom. But you know, and I would put makeup on and I would just sit in front of the mirror and mimic them.
Yeah.
Literally.
That's amazing.
I really would do that.
It works.
It does work.
I mean,
work.
Olympians do that.
I know. I was visualizing, yeah, right? Little and behold, from such a young age, I was so consumed. I was very consumed. And I would tell everybody, like, one day, I'm going to be a star. Like, you can laugh all you want, but I'm going to make it.
Yeah. What were the reactions? With laughter?
Obviously.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, yeah, I keep dreaming.
Okay.
I'm like, yeah, you wait.
But you just knew.
I knew.
Yeah.
I knew I was meant for something big.
Yeah.
I knew it in my heart.
In the path, the psychology path, I mean, I imagine it's helped you along the entire journey, but
yeah,
that just felt right to pursue that until something materialized, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
I was in school, but that was the deal with my parents. I had to go to school.
Oh,
like
I
could not do anything. You know, they were like, you got to have an education.
Okay.
We got to keep you occupied.
Yeah.
Can't just be free-spirited all the way.
Sure.
So that's good because it gave me structure.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the end goal. The end goal is don't know how I'm going to get there, but I'm going to be a star. So when I met those people, the record label, it was like, oh, this is my in. Let me go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it kind of just spiraled from there.
Well, there was this line that I read that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like this one thing that you said kind of set the rest of your life. And it was, I think there are people singing or whatnot, or you're around that manager or that entertainment manager. And you said something like, hey, I can sing too.
Yes.
Right? Like, what gave you the courage to speak up and say that?
Well, because I knew I could sing.
Yeah.
And I had been practicing. And they were all in the studio just sitting there. And it was like the perfect opportunity. And I'm like, just let me go on the mic and do something.
Yeah.
And then I started singing Mariah Carey and then everybody's mouth just dropped. And I'm like, huh, I'm in.
Okay.
Like, I'm in. And I was.
Yeah.
I was. After that, they're like, oh, why didn't you tell us you sang? Seriously. Like, why didn't you tell us? You're amazing. And, you know, you're packageable. I remember them saying that. She's packageable, you know? They're like, okay, let's do it. And I'm like, perfect. And then they put me in the studio right away.
What happened next?
So after that, I was in the studio working on my first album. And then our radio programmer had this song, which was Stereo Love. And Stereo Love, they wanted a North American artist to sing this song. And the programmer is like, I know you just signed Mia, but I think Mia would sound amazing on this record. And if she could do it justice, like this would be really big because J-Lo just passed on it because she's not doing any music right now. So I'm just like, give me the song.
Yeah.
Give me the song. I don't even care what the genre is. I don't care if it's my style or not. Just give it to me.
Was it your style at that time?
No.
No. Okay.
Not at all. I was more of an R&B, more of a, yeah, definitely more R&B
okay.
person. EDM was not my thing.
Okay.
Dance music was not my thing at all at the beginning. But then I did hear Stereo Love. And when I heard Stereo Love, I'm like, this song is magical. It's different. Mm. It's definitely different. So I went in the studio, demoed it, and sent it back. And then literally a week later, the song was out everywhere.
Okay.
Everywhere. Like, I didn't have Facebook. I didn't have an identity yet. I was just this girl with this really, this song that was blowing up.
Yeah.
So my life changed just like that.
Instantly, yeah.
Like, instantly.
Yeah, just for perspective, I mean, we're talking, like, as of right now, I think what Stereo Love has something like 100 plus million views or listens or streams, whatever you want to count. I mean, it's pretty significant.
4 times platinum. Yeah,
yeah,
it's a pretty big record for your first record.
Yes.
You know, like, things like that don't normally happen. It's even to artists.
Yeah.
It's like the stars aligned.
So
for me,
take me back with your, like, in your mind at that time, how were you feeling? Like, was this just what I've been dreaming of? Like,
yeah.
And now it's taking off, and like, kind of like, what was happening around that time?
I think for me, I couldn't believe what was happening. I think I was just in shock, and I was like, wow, like, be careful what you wish for, because this might just happen. And it happened. So that's kind of what my psyche was always saying, like, oh my God, this really happened? Holy, I'm famous now.
Okay.
I'm on the radio.
Yeah.
Like, holy, I'm getting flown out for shows. Everybody knows my name. That's crazy. So I think it kind of took the best of me for sure at the beginning. It took me a while to come back down to reality because I was living, I was on a high.
Totally.
Massive high.
Totally. What were your parents saying at that time?
I think mom and dad couldn't really believe it either. But they were
probably on the high too.
They were on a high, and I think they were just so happy for me. They were just so happy for me. Yeah. So I think everybody was just on that magic carpet ride at the beginning for sure.
So what does it feel like to sing in front of, like, what the is the largest crowd, 200,000 people?
Yeah. Yes.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
Or 500 to 200, like 500 person town, village, whatever you want to say, describe the town to 200,000 people.
Yeah.
What is that like? I'm asking for a friend, of course.
Asking for a friend. It's, I don't think there's a moment that I'll ever be able to experience that type of, it just does something to your heart to know that there's all these people singing your song with you that you wrote. Is it's an indescribable feeling.
Yeah.
It's an indescribable feeling, especially as an artist.
My mom.
Yeah, for me, it's like the love of my life. It's like that. It's indescribable. I can't tell you, like, the adrenaline I got from there and just looking at my team, and we were just all like, wow. Like, yeah, it's like, I didn't even know if the words could come out because I was just in awe. It was definitely an aha moment for me.
Where did that, like, show up in your body? Even now, as you're saying it, like, where does it show up for you?
Oh, in my heart. Like, I could cry because it was just so beautiful. It's just so beautiful how music is so powerful and it connects people no matter where you are in the world. And that's kind of where my mindset started changing a lot. Like being more mindful of what I'm doing here. Because at first I really wasn't mindful of the messaging and the power that we have as musicians.
Sure.
We were just kind of going with the flow. But
Just hanging on.
Yeah. But then I'm like, wow, that's crazy. Like, God blessed me to give me this. I definitely need to do something with this platform that I have that's so powerful.
Okay.
And do it for good.
Yeah.
Use it for good. And that's kind of where my transition started happening, definitely.
Well, I was going to ask you, like, when did it start to become not beautiful in a way?
Yeah.
Not the art, of course, but just the process and being in, you know, to use your words, like, you were packaged, essentially.
Exactly.
And you're in the system. And now you're on this rocket ship. There's a lot of people involved.
Uh-huh.
And I can only imagine just... It's got to feel like life is moving so fast. And at one point, it's like, what happened to that little girl, Mia, that, you know, your dad described? Like, is she still there? Right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what happens because life is moving so fast. You kind of just start losing yourself. And because everything is done for you and controlled for you, you don't even have control of your own life anymore. So that being said, it's a very tough industry as a woman in the music business. Very tough.
Yeah.
And you need to have, like I said, a very strong foundation to be able to keep your head up and stand up for what you believe in. Because if you don't, they'll plan it for you.
Okay.
Because they're just about selling records. So they're just literally about, well, this is what's in right now. So either you do it or we move on to the next artist. Simple. Like you don't have you don't even have a say anymore. You don't like this style of music? We don't care. We don't care.
Yeah.
So all these things, like even how you dress, how you portray yourself in music videos, what's the trend? Is it sexualized? Is it aligning with who you are? And when these things started popping up for me and I was doing things that were really kind of not me, I was like, I can't do this. This doesn't feel right for me. So I would butt heads. And because I'm very strong-willed, it was difficult. It was very difficult. So things started to not go so well internally with the business because I would just not be on board.
How did you pull yourself out of, like, I guess the autopilot of the machine? Like, would you have some reflective moments, some quiet time? Because I imagine it's just so busy and there's so much going on. Like, how did you find that, like, stillness in your own mind and be like, you know what, this is not me?
I call mom. I call mom and dad all the time, and they're the ones that keep you grounded for sure. And they would always be like, well, whatever you decide, we support you. Whatever happens, you can always come home. And I think just knowing that was like, okay, if I choose to not do this, I know I'm always safe. I always have a place to go.
Yeah.
And just kind of knowing that really helped me. Even though it's not what you want to do, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, but, or you don't want to disappoint them. But I know I had that security blanket. And that's why I'm so grateful that I have those parents.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I had to make lots of big decisions. And I didn't know what these big decisions were going to entail as I was making them. Mm. And they weren't always the right ones.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, and then you also have like the contrast of things are feeling a little off, but like, I think you've told me this in past conversations, but like your bank account's growing, there's more opportunities, there's, you know, like essentially you're fulfilling all of your dreams, but then there's this whole other side that's like, something feels off here.
Oh, completely, right? Completely. A big bank account means nothing if you don't feel good in the inside.
Yeah.
That doesn't fill the void at all, you know? And when you're young and you're famous and like everybody thinks your life is so perfect, it's like you kind of feel a sense of, well, I can't really complain. Like people would dream to be where I'm at right now. So you kind of keep all these things in and it's like you feel guilty for feeling ungrateful. So it's kind of like you invalidate your feelings, right? You don't want to validate the feelings that you're feeling because you feel like I need to be grateful. So I like look at all my blessings.
Yeah.
Why am I complaining?
And ignore this.
Yeah. Why am I complaining?
Yeah.
So that was definitely a big battle for me for a long time, for sure. So I kind of would just, I would fight, but I would kind of meet people in like halfway, but then I would just go home at night and cry. I would do my shows and not even be happy anymore. And that's when I knew, I'm like, okay, I definitely need to make changes here.
Okay. So what happened? What did you do?
I said bye to the label. I said, I gotta go. I said, I gotta go. I can't do this anymore. And they're like, well, you're gonna regret this. Because we're going to make it really difficult for you to be successful.
Where did that land in that moment? Was there anger?
At the
time,
I think I had this sense of, huh, you can't touch me. I'm already successful.
Okay.
I'm too successful. I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
But the reality wasn't that at all.
Yeah.
Because blacklisting happens in the business if you don't do what you say, what they say. That's it. Like, it only takes one phone call. And then you're kind of, nobody wants to touch you. Exactly.
It's a lot to, I feel the heaviness of that. And it wasn't even in it, obviously.
Yeah. And that's really difficult. And it happens a lot. And it happens a lot to women, especially in the music business. I mean, it happens to men too. But for women, it's a man's world in this business.
Mm-hmm.
They completely... you're completely disregarded.
Yeah.
Completely. And then they put all these things like, well, you're getting old now. You don't look as good as you used to. They'll pull up your videos, let's say, at a meeting, and then they'll read your comments on YouTube.
Oh.
And then they'll be like, yeah, see, you're starting to look old. Everybody's saying you're looking old in a meeting full of people, full of men. And they're just dissecting you.
Brutal.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So when that is happening, it's like brainwashing you. You don't even know. You don't even know how to look at yourself anymore. So it makes you become insecure. It makes you become all these things that you're not.
Yeah. Well, this is where, like, I can see it. If you don't have that strong foundation, you can easily just be tipped over and be like, okay, well, what do I need to do, right?
Yeah.
And then you're stuck. You're in the system.
Exactly. Because a lot of these artists, they don't have the strong support from the family or they don't have the right people around them, and they have all the wrong people around them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad. It's sad because they do dissect you and they do that
mm-hmm.
from every angle.
So you left the label. When did you hit, like, your rock bottom?
I would say 2018 was really hard for me when I realized that I couldn't make it anymore on my own. Like, it was really difficult. It was really difficult to get on the radio. It was really difficult for me to get the proper marketing, which, like, with Spotify and all these placements, because...
Yeah.
I lost that contact, and I realized that I had been blacklisted from a lot of other people because I did my due diligence. Yeah.
How long was that period though, when you left the label to 2018?
From 2016 to 2018. When I left, I was okay. I released a single and it did really well because I was kind of still following up the momentum and I did it by myself. But then things started going down and I couldn't keep up because I was indeed blacklisted in the business.
Correct.
Yeah.
So then you realized that what you were doing, I guess, wasn't enough or wasn't working or wasn't going to get you to where you had come from. Like, what was happening there?
Well, it's either I had to make a choice. Do I want to do this independently and be okay with being an artist that's not going to maybe achieve platinum, gold, or these things? And I just want to do music for my fans that have followed me because they're still there.
Yeah.
And that's who matters at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Or am I going to fight my way through this? And am I going to sign to another label that's going to just be the same thing?
Yeah.
Because they all have the same agenda at the end of the day. So I definitely decided to go the independent route and embrace the fact that, you know what, Mia? Numbers don't mean anything.
Mm.
It's the art that you put out in the world and what it does for other people.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what my journey's been so far. And that's the journey I took.
Mm-hmm. There's your profession, but what you're sharing in the emotions and being in all these systems and whatnot and being kind of on autopilot and deciding it doesn't align can relate to a lot of people in so many different industries.
Yeah. Right? No, for sure. Like, when those moments were happening, because it was like, it was my career and my whole life was my career. And I hit such rock bottom. My goodness, I started drinking, which is not me, but drinking a lot just to
numb out.
I just started just doing foolish things. That was just so not me, aligning myself with people that I shouldn't have been aligning myself with, just to find something to do, something to distract me, just going down the really wrong path. And yeah, it just really, really wasn't good. And yeah, my parents had to take me out of it for sure.
Okay.
For sure. I was really not okay. Really not okay.
Did you have any tools at that point, like rituals or tools that pulled you out of the spiral or got you to that point where you could ask for help? Or?
Well, my parents saw it, thank God. Yeah, I really have them to thank for that, because they know me so well, and they knew I just wasn't okay.
Yeah.
And I just had to cut off a lot of people, a lot of negative energy around me. I just had to let that all go and move. That's what I did. Mm-hmm. I moved locations.
Okay.
Yeah. And I kind of...
Where were you?
I was in Toronto.
Okay.
My home was in Toronto, but then I sold my home and then I moved to Florida. And that was a new beginning for me, but it took a long time. I did lots of spiritual work.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of that.
Yes. I did lots of spiritual work. I got myself an amazing shaman.
Okay.
And he rebalanced my chakras and did lots of beautiful energy healing. And that kind of, it slowly but surely, it started getting better for me.
Yeah.
And I started to see some light at the end of the tunnel and not being so depressed.
Yeah. What was the next chapter that was being kind of born in that time? Like, there was the healing, of course, but where were you seeing yourself next? What were you trying to get to?
At the time, I didn't know what was next, to be honest. I just didn't know. I did not know. I didn't work. I took a whole break. I mean, I would always write songs and kind of do songs here and there just to get my thoughts out there. But I had no plan. I was kind of just going with the wind. I was just trying to find Mia. Like, where is Mia? Like, what's me? Who am I? I just didn't know who I was. I completely lost my sense of self, for sure. So, yeah, for that, like, I would say a good 8 months to a year, it was definitely a challenging year.
Yeah.
But a very needed year, for sure.
Yeah, and just take the time.
Heal,
essentially.
And heal. Yeah, because healing hurts. Healing hurts. There's a lot of crying, you know, and then you think you're okay, and then you realize you're not okay because you'll be somewhere and something will trigger you, and then you just go home and you're just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of these things happen, but I would always remember, I have my health. I have an amazing family. I'm talented. I'm a beautiful girl. Like, I'm smart. Like, I would just constantly tell myself these things. And you will find yourself, Mia. This is not the end. This is not the end. You will find yourself. And I just kept saying that to me over and over and over and over again. And that really definitely helped.
Okay. So what came out of that period of healing?
Well, I decided that I needed to help other people that were going through this as me, because by listening to other people's stories and seeing what they go through, it kind of made me realize, oh my God, I'm really not alone in this, right? So it's like more people need to speak up about what goes on, especially in the music industry or in the creative space as a whole. So that really helped. And I'm just like, you know what? I think I'm going to dedicate my life to helping others and to use my platform for good.
Okay.
And that's kind of where my book idea came out, where the speaking engagement started coming out, like where all these things, you know, like I'm like, let me just start small. I'm not sure where this is going to lead to, but I think this is where I need to go. And I've kind of just been following that path. Yeah.
The fans at that time, like those true fans that hung around, like what were they saying? What's the interaction been?
You know, I'm so blessed because my fans are great. They're always like so supportive. And I think they followed my journey. And I think without me even describing that I was in pain, I think they just knew.
Yeah, yeah.
They just feel it.
Yeah.
And just having them send me messages all the time, like, your music is doing something for me. Please don't stop your music. Like, sharing their experience with my music. That uplifted me so much, and it gave me the fuel I so needed at the time, because I was by myself, because I had to let go of all my previous team, everybody that I worked with for years. Like, I didn't talk to anybody anymore. Nobody, everything was done.
How did you do that?
I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, I don't know how I did it, but I did it.
But like, mentally, even to just like start the process, like, what? Were there some key questions that you were thinking about just to do it?
I just have to do it. I just have to be strong. I'm better than that, because I don't want to be like that. I want to be better. And that's always kind of how I see things. It's like, okay, what does my highest self look like? How does she show up in the world? How do you show up as your best self? And I always tell myself that. And I think when I was going through these things, that's really one thing that really helped me, is I would just say, okay, Mia, let's meditate and take yourself and try to look at yourself from up top.
Yeah, zoom out.
Yeah, yeah, zoom out.
Yeah.
And show up as her. Do the best that you can. And I think that's kind of what really helped me.
Well, so like, when it comes to relationships, I mean, they're so tough, obviously, but even, again, outside of just the industry, just like, we hang on to friends and just relationships in general as if we can't outgrow them. And it's not that they're not always bad, but sometimes we evolve in different ways that, okay, I can be grateful for those 5 or 10 years or whatever. But now it's like, to your point, like, my evolved self or my higher self, I'm here now. And you're over here, and that's fine. Like, that's your ride. But like, we've got to release ourselves. Like, it's like we have this like strange relationship with relationships that we just have to keep them going on forever. Like, they're in eternal relationships that we can't just let some of those go. Wild.
It is wild. But once you learn the art of detaching, it's magical.
Yeah.
You become very powerful.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how did you start surrounding yourself with more aligned people, I guess?
For a long time, I would say, like, for at least a year, I barely talked to anybody. I would barely go out. I would just stick to myself. And I kind of just really did the work for me. I traveled alone. I did. I went to some retreats, did lots of meditation, did lots of all the stuff.
Yeah.
You name it, I've tried it.
Okay.
You know? And that helped me so much. And you know what happened during that process is that I started enjoying being alone a lot.
So you, during that whole, the healing journey part of the story, here is a chapter in your life, you can say, a lot of travel, a lot of retreats, but a lot of time alone.
Yes. Right?
Which to me, it's interesting just in how we started this. I can't help but think about coming back to the small town that you came from, right? Where there aren't a million people surrounding all the time. And there's that sense of safety and comfort and whatnot. So in a way, it's like coming kind of full circle so you can restart.
Yeah.
So what happened? Like, Jerry, like, what formed that restart for you?
Well, definitely I was on that journey and then COVID hit.
Okay.
So when COVID hit in 2019.
Yeah.
Is it 2019 or 20?
No, it feels like a long time.
Anyways, it was a long time during COVID. I was in Florida and my parents didn't want to stay in Florida. So they went back to New Brunswick.
Okay.
Because everybody was in panic mode.
Yeah.
And I chose to stay in Florida.
Oh, okay.
By myself. I didn't think it was going to be like 2 years by myself, but it ended up being 2 years by myself.
Yeah.
And during those 2 years, I feel I became a whole different Mia.
Oh, wow.
I think everything changed about me.
How so?
In every possible way. I think I just came to terms with a lot of things. I started looking at things from a better perspective. I really try to manage my thoughts, look at things the optimistic way, and to be honest, I've always been a very positive person by nature, but looking at things from a different perspective, like I would always contemplate, like, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? Like,
yeah,
instead
the why
of
questions,
saying,
yeah.
Why is this happening for me? And just doing little changes like that. And then I started going a little bit deeper and thinking about all the people that have hurt me and that didn't really want to see me succeed and why they would take this dream away from me. Why did they want that? And I was just trying to just understand it from that perspective. And I, in some way, it helped.
Yeah.
It kind of helped. I started digging about how they live their life, where they're coming from, and why they are who they are, and what makes people behave as such, mm-hmm. again, from psychology background.
Yeah.
But I really didn't use it until then. And that really helped me. Once I started to really understand others and how why they do the things that they do, and it's not always good, but there's always like an underlining. And if you can try to just understand and forgive for yourself, life will get better for you. And life did start getting better for me. And the more and more I did that, the more clear everything started to become.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what really started helping me in this new journey.
It sounds like you released a lot of like mental clutter and debt from all of those experiences and relationships that kind of held you back in a way. Like they may have catapulted things at one point, but then really held you back from the true me, right?
100%. I used to think, oh my God, if I don't have this person by my side, I'm nothing.
Yeah.
Like, why did I think that? This is just one person. How could I let one person dictate my life? How is that possible? How can you have that much influence on me when you don't even call to see if I'm okay? Like, why do I allow so much mental space for you in my mind? And I did that with so many people. And I was like so angry all the time that nobody cared. And I felt that nobody cared. Nobody was there when I've done so much for them and all of that stuff. And it was like that vicious cycle talking in my mind over and over again. But then I'm like, wait a minute. Like, what are you doing? Like, get out of your head and look at things from a different perspective. And that's really when the real healing started. And once I started doing that, I started being so much more calm and just kind of looking at things for what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed everything.
So it sounds like meditation is one of those kind of non-negotiable practices or the one that helped a lot. Are there any? But why don't we just talk about that first? What does your meditation practice look like?
Honestly, I think I make everything kind of, you know, like when you do chores around your house, I think I zone out and I do spiritual practice. I make everything spiritual,
sure.
Kind of a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It really helps me. Like even just making my bed, I enjoy it. Like
yeah.
I make it and I'm like, oh, let's make it into an
That's a superpower. Most people can't do that.
Yes. Let me be present. Let me enjoy making my bed. Or like when I'm looking at a beautiful beach and a sunset, like take away the phone. Like don't film it, Mia. Film it for your mind and your mind. And I've just started doing that a lot. Those are like massive practices for me that really change everything. Just not being so connected to social media.
Yeah.
Definitely. Not watching TV as much, like all these things.
So just kind of cascaded.
Yeah.
There's like the bigger, there's first pulling you out of the autopilot in the system and making that big, big decision. And then going through the journey of just healing, which, you know, was thankfully your parents were there to help pull you out of that.
So grateful.
Yeah. So am I. I mean, I think all of us are because you're doing a lot of really good work for the world and helping a lot of people. So I'm happy they were able to see that as well and do that. And then it sounds like the practices started to show up and the rituals started to show up and you found this beautiful way to integrate meditation or meditative states, let's just say, from in like your daily life, which is so critical because, you know, we can go on these silent retreats or different retreats with, obviously there's a ton of benefit, but the majority of our life is spent like here or walking the streets. So if we can find ways to integrate these practices, then we can be more present, more calm, mm-hmm. and keep the mind clear. And then you start seeing things, right?
100%. It's like as simple as, you know, when you first thing in the morning, if you just go out and get your coffee and like you kind of just like zone out. I've tried to make a point to the first person I see to smile at them and say hello.
I love it. Yeah.
That will change your whole day.
The gratitude loop.
Yes.
It powerful.
It will change your whole day. It's so simple. And it's like just seeing their face, whether it's like, oh my God, she's talking to me, or it just, the energy shift.
Yeah.
Sets the tone for the day. And it's little things like that, little habits, little magic habits that really start to change your mindset.
Yeah. I mean, it makes your day, it makes their day. Yeah, another one you can do that I'm sure you would love is just to pull out your like list of text messages and just scroll to the bottom and just say, hey, I was just thinking about you. Hope you have a great day. And typically that person will write back and, hey, it's been a while. I haven't heard from you. Thank you. But again, it's the same gratitude loop playing out. Which what is not happening when we do those things are the looping negative narratives or the stories that we're playing over and over in our minds, right? We can kind of get into that like a dopamine serotonin hit.
Yes.
And that's where we create our best work and feel our best from.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes. Exactly. It's like you feel so good.
Yeah.
You know, and then you want to do more.
Yeah.
And then and then you kind of get into the habit of just doing that.
Yeah.
And then you feel so good. So then when you feel good, that's when you can create magic.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
Can't create good if you don't feel good. Yeah. So that's the number one thing. You have to see what feels good inside.
Well, let's talk about feeling good and creating. There's music, of course, that I'd love to ask you more about around just where are you creating from now versus, you know, in the past, and then you're writing books and you're speaking in front of people that require, you know, preparation and then whole other element of creation.
Yes.
So what's your flow to get into the zone of creator mode and whatnot?
Well, I'm kind of one of these, I love routines. So I definitely have to have my routine on a daily basis. I'm off track, it's really hard for me to create so openly. So I wake up, I don't look at my phone. I try not to. And sometimes you do, but I really try not to. And then I have my glass of lemon water with apple cider vinegar,
okay?
And honey. It's the key, everyone. It's the key.
The honey is the key?
The honey is the key.
Okay.
And then I go to Pilates. Okay. And during that time in the morning, I really try to not have any distractions and just center myself. And after my Pilates, I'll do a nice little meditation, a 5-minute one, because I feel so good and I feel energized, and then I can start. And then I kind of just go with the flow. I see what feels right to me. And if that day I feel like creating a song, I create a song. And if that day I feel like writing on my book, I write on my book. Or if I want to feel like I need my media training for my speaking engagements, I do what I have to do.
Yeah.
But that's kind of my flow.
That's the grounding. So
that's
is that like
grounding.
A good hour, an hour and a half or so in the morning?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say that. My mornings start at 10. Yeah, like at 10 I'm normally done. And then I can start work.
Wow. It's so for everyone listening or watching, it is possible to do this and not wake up at 4 in the morning. Because I know that is That is the culture. That is what everybody talks about.
I mean, you know.
What is your discipline? You have to get it done. That's the key.
Yeah. You do what works for you. If you love waking up early in the morning and it feels right for you, then do that. But if it doesn't feel right to you, then don't do it. Do what feels good for you and set your schedule accordingly.
Yeah, that's the key.
Yeah, that's the key. I can't wake up at 5 a.m. Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't.
Fair.
I'm more of a 7 a.m.
Yeah, I respect that. So then life happens, and with life that we get thrown the little curveballs in the day sometimes. Some are bigger than others. But when your mind is thrown off with something, okay. And it doesn't have, like, there's a million different things I can do. That can be an email, a message, whatever. Or not an email and not a message and waiting for it equally is torturous, at least for me. Like, how do you reset then and come back to that morning grounding? Like, do you have any of those?
I always say, like, I think I'm so used to having, like, not good news, okay. Especially in my business. Like, you know, like, you always wait.
Yeah.
I think I'm just trained to, like, well, it's on to the next.
Yes.
Yes. Like, don't sweat it. Something else is going to happen. And just keep forging ahead. That's kind of what I say. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, if it's not this, it's something else, or it's not meant to be. You know, if it's a no, every no gets you closer to a yes, is my favorite saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's just, it's protecting you. So I kind of just look at it from that sense, even though it's hard.
Of course.
Obviously, we all have that. But if you kind of tell yourself these things, it'll make it a little bit easier.
How much of that is your dad coming out in those early years as an entrepreneur?
My dad, but I always remember my dad, he would always tell me, don't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah.
Focus on your health first, because without your health, there's nothing. And just do what feels right for you, and the money will come.
Yeah.
Money will always come. You know, like, put that last.
Yeah. End of day, any kind of wind down routines or anything like that, like staples for you?
Yeah, definitely. I think every night before I go to bed, I say my prayer, I say my gratitude, and I write down in my journal what's, like, how my day went, what's, like, what are my thoughts. Like, I kind of just do a...
like a free writing?
Yeah, writing, a dump.
Okay.
I call it a dump. And I just dump all my things, and then I send it off with some love and light, and then I go to bed.
Are there any prompts that have been kind of the biggest influence for you in big moments or times that you're reflecting on in your journal? Or it sounds like you do seem like a very reflective person, whether you're writing that down or not.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like you're always asking questions and to, like, reframe and process things.
Mm-hmm.
But are there any that come to mind that have been incredibly helpful?
Yeah, I think for me, it's what's stopping me from being my best self. That's the one. Like, what is hindering me on being my, like, operating at my highest self? What is it? What's triggering me? What's stopping me?
Yeah.
What's in my way? And I think that question, when you just look at it and you start downloading, you see what it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you ask yourself who your best self was?
Oh, that's a great one. That's a great one. I need to change that. Thank you, Mark.
I know. Well, I suspect you know who that is.
My best self?
Yeah.
It's me right now.
Yes. I find it so bad.
It's me right now. But I love that, especially when you're not feeling your best self. It's like,
yeah,
okay.
You can go back to it.
You go back to it. And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Okay. Cool. Well, I've got a prompt for your journal for tonight.
I like that. That's a great prompt. I like the context.
What's got you excited next? Like, the next chapter, I guess, literally, since you are writing your second book, but just in your story and what you're working towards, like, what's got you excited?
You know, I think what gets me excited is doing this with you, and it's just expanding this platform and this network that we're creating.
Yeah.
And just all these opportunities that I know we're going to have the chance to do that's going to come. And we're going to just seeing this grow, because it's so needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's really making me so excited, because I see such a big need for it. And the more and more I dive in, I'm like, wow, like, I'm so on the right path, because so many people need guidance and need help and just somebody to talk to, because... Don't we wish we had that when we were younger?
Yeah. Well, no one talked about this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I feel like it's a great time, and I feel so aligned, and I'm just so excited to be part of this. and to just keep creating and find innovative ways to help, you know, because that's what I do.
Yeah.
Just to find different ways and see what comes out of it.
And what are you hearing? Because I know you mentor a lot of young women and creatives and musicians and whatnot. Like, what are you hearing from them in terms of what they need or what they're struggling with?
I think a lot of people are just struggling to really find inner peace within, you know? And that's kind of what I've been seeing. They have so much trauma from growing up that hasn't been addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of just get lost on the hamster wheel.
Yeah. It's and just they autopilot.
Just, yeah, living. They feel like they're just on autopilot and they just don't even know who they really are. And what I do with my students is that I just try to just find that inner child and where does it sit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just to get back to the basics because that's what they really struggle with, is identity.
Well, and just to pause all of the noise surrounding them and us, like, that's the unfortunate part. I wish this was different, but it's as soon as we walk out of this container, there's just so much going on.
Yeah.
You're getting hit with all of this content. You turn the news on, it's negative headlines. Like, so if you don't have any of these kind of foundational practices, you're kind of set up to fail.
100%.
Right?
You are set up to fail when your life is consumed with social media.
Yeah.
That's another topic, but like, it's too much information, too much. It's consuming, consuming, consuming. It's like, you don't even go outside anymore.
Yeah.
You don't even want to put your phone down for 5 minutes because you're so afraid of what you're going to miss on social media. It's crazy. And it's really affecting the younger generation.
Mm-hmm. So how do you manage it? Because I know, I mean, you across your platforms, you've got roughly 1 million people that are following your work. Any like best practices that have helped for you to just make that manageable and help versus, you know, that system bringing you down?
Yeah. I try to only follow people that really inspire me.
Okay.
Like if I see something that's not resonating with me, I don't look at it anymore. And I really try to limit my like how often I look at it because you can get really caught up in that.
Yeah, well, for
yeah,
sure.
You can. And then it's like you're
designed to do that.
Yeah. And then like as soon as you know it, there's like 2-3 hours has passed and you've been looking at quotes or speak. It's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much. You got to go and do your own thing. And it stops you from being creative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then what it does is it's like, okay, maybe you... Like, I really love watching, you know, when you see those reels where it's like positive reels and stuff.
Yeah.
So I love hearing them.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I not doing them? Like,
yeah.
Like, get off this. It's stopping you from essentially creating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're too busy consuming other people's stuff. And then you got to just do it for yourself, not for anybody else, but for you.
Yeah. Well, and I think like once you're clear again with like, who you are, who you're striving to become, who that higher self is, then it's just like a bit of an audit of, okay, well, what I'm looking at or the relationships in my life, and this is another example of like that relationship audit, it's just now you're looking at who you're following. If you clean that up and have everything being supportive to that person.
Yes.
Then, first of all, you're setting yourself up to succeed in that moment versus the reverse, right?
Exactly. So yeah, your followers are very important because that's what you're going to consume. So make sure you follow people that inspire you, that make you feel good.
Yeah.
And that pour back into you. Well, unless you don't know them, but you
know. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but it comes right, like I come back to the Tony Robbins tapes, but like that's just in the background. It's the same thing. Like if you don't have to, you can have all these mentors you've never even met them. But their content is inspiring your mind and giving you positive mental nutrition every day.
Exactly. And it's so important. It's so, so, so important. So important.
Well, last question for you. Who is Mia today?
Mia today. So Mia is a girl from New Brunswick that did lots of exciting things that had the privilege to live her dream.
Mm.
And I am so very grateful for that. And she is just a girl trying to better herself every day and enjoy life to the fullest and bring as many people with her as she can.
All said.
Yeah.
Well, I, for one, am super grateful to you for making some time for this conversation, but a higher thank you in going through that experience and coming out the other side and finding, going through the work and doing the healing and finding the finding your way back essentially to that little girl from New Brunswick, because the ripple effect of what you're putting out into this world is helping a lot of people. So thank you.
And that's all I can wish for.
Incredible.
Yes. Thank you so much, Mark.
Let's do it. Watch the mic there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Still.
Okay. So you, at the beginning, you mentioned when that moment in Ottawa where you said, I can sing too. And then when the system started and you remember someone saying, oh yeah, you're packageable, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
At that time, it seemed like that's great. Like I, you know, this is my entry into the industry. But at one point that changed.
Yes.
And what I'd love to ask you about, just for others that are currently in this, like what are the signs that they should be looking out for when that becomes toxic?
Well, when they start to encourage changing your look, when they start saying you need to dress a little more provocatively to sell records, because everybody's doing it, especially right now with what's going on. It's like clothing is very limited.
Yeah, it's optional.
It's optional, and that's not okay. When they tell you that you might need plastic surgery, that you need to change certain things, all of these things that try to take away from your natural beauty and who you are as a person, because you have to remember why you want to be an artist in the first place, is your love of singing. Your love of entertainment, your love of showmanship.
Yeah.
And that's really important. You can't lose focus of what it's really about. When it starts becoming all about the physical and how you're going to sell records and how you're going to shock the public with your TikToks or your Instagram, then you know you're just becoming a product of a product of what they want.
Yeah.
It's not who you are anymore.
Well, yeah.
And there's so many examples of this that are going on right now, especially when it has to do with your religion, your faith, your spirituality.
Yeah, that's for you.
Yeah, that's for you. Nobody can take that away from you, but you should not be promoting something that you don't believe inside ever. You can't compromise that ever.
Yeah. How did you feel in those moments when some of that stuff was happening to you?
Sad, angry, slowly just started being unrecognizable because I just didn't know who I was anymore. I'm like, what am I doing? This is not me. I'm from a little town. Like, yeah. I can't be doing this stuff. That's not who I am at all. I'm a good person.
Yeah.
You know? And when they just sit there and they objectify you. And it's the manipulation of what they use to get what they want to come across. They'll manipulate you into saying, well, everybody else is saying that about you. Everybody's saying this and this and that. Like, so you have to change it. You have to change it. Their opinions matter. No, it doesn't matter, actually.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But that's not what they're going to make you believe. And they'll embarrass you. They'll belittle you. They'll take it to as many levels as possible until they get their point across.
So for you, you got to the point where you had enough.
Yeah.
I'm assuming, like, where you, because you heard those whispers in your own body essentially when that was coming up, and then you eventually got to this point where it's not worth it.
No.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. If I'm on the biggest stages in the world and I leave my stage and I'm crying.
Yeah.
Then I know I'm not aligned anymore. This is not who I am. And when all I kept thinking about, oh my God, is my manager going to be really happy about my performance today? Wasn't about the fans anymore. Wasn't about why I was doing art. I was so focused on impressing the label because that's what they wanted, because they would tear me down so much.
Yeah.
And I just completely lost my sense of self. I lost why I was doing this. And that needed to end.
Sorry, I had to go through that.
It's okay. It's okay. Maybe a better person because of it. Yeah. Yeah.
So jumping off of that, the sense of self, so many of us in our jobs, and that's soon to be amplified for you because you're a thing. I know that I ascribe too much value in being a TV director and not as much value in being a good person.
Yeah. Titles.
I think we all do that.
Yes.
How did you make that transition from going, I have value beyond being a pop star?
Oh, I like that. That's a very great question.
And maybe you can
re-ask
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's sure. A fantastic question.
Well, I've noticed in just studying people in general that, and myself included, that we have a tendency to place two words in front of a label all the time. I am a pop star. I am X, whatever. But that's not who we actually are, right? Now, that's just something we're doing. It's part of our journey, but it's not who we are. Like, how did you navigate?
Oh, that was such a difficult one because I was really attached to what I was. That's the only thing that gave me value. I didn't feel any value as Martine, which is my real name.
Yeah, Martine Johnson. Yeah.
Martine Johnson as to Mia Martina. I completely disregarded Martine Johnson. She's just a little village girl, you know? And having said that, I wouldn't even feel comfortable introducing myself as that girl because I was so, my ego was so stuck to Mia Martina. I'm a pop star. I made it, you know, and I really had to let go of all these things. And I think the what made me really crumble even way down the rabbit hole was that when I wasn't selling as many records as I used to and my fame started to go down because I didn't have the same support, that's what really affected me because I wasn't performing as Mia Martina anymore at that level.
At the peak, yeah.
At the peak. And you chase the peak. You're never ready for when it comes down. And I think that's what needs to change is that when artists go to that level, you need to understand that you're going to come here. It's inevitable. You can't always be at the top. So you really have to stick to who you are. You have to ground yourself.
Yeah.
And it's really, really hard. It's really hard to find that balance.
Mm-hmm. How did you get there? What helped you?
I had to fall rock bottom and look at everything from a different perspective and see who was there for me. And who was there for me was mom and dad, my family. And that's what made me realize if these people are not making money off me, I'm nothing. All these birthdays that they gave me, all these presents that they gave me, all these things, which are just things.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything. It means zero.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what made me just, oh my God, that was really tough for me. It was really tough for me to realize that these people just did not care. They did not care about you.
Did you ever contemplate bringing back Martine Johnson as a name?
You know, that's funny. I should, but I'm definitely happy to say it. Now, definitely. Yeah. But I think I was just so used to Mia Martina. But maybe she should. Maybe she should.
Part two.
Maybe she should, actually. Yes, because Mia Martina comes with a lot of different experiences. Maybe Martine Johnson will be a whole different experience.
Love it.